Thank you. Good morning. This morning I'm going to talk on equanimity, which is one of the most important Buddhist virtues. Pali, it's upeksha, U-P-E-K-S-H-A, upeksha. The up means over, upa means over, and iksh means look. So look over would be a translation for it. We say equanimity. So sometimes around here we talk about big mind and little mind in our meditation. Little mind being that jabbery, conversational mind that's always at work. And big mind being the larger container. We try to rest in big mind. So you might think of equanimity as looking over, as big mind, kind of the same concept. In perhaps more contemporary terms, equanimity might be thought of as that quality that we cultivate to help us not over-dramatize the events of our lives, to not react to things that happen in our lives with a lot of drama or a lot of exaggeration. We have an election coming up, and many people are very excited about the election. There's a lot of energy around the election, and on the morning of November, whatever the date is, that second, is that the day after the election?
Oh, no. So
the third. So Wednesday morning, many people will wake up feeling like the world has ended. That would be a perfect opportunity to cultivate equanimity. I live in a household. My partner tends to be. He does not practice meditation. He does play music. He's the kind of person who he woke up with a cough yesterday. And last year he had a cough for about, like it went on for like 4 months. You know, it's really just one of these things. It's right on. Well, he announced yesterday morning when he came out of the bathroom that if this cough is like last year's, he's going to commit suicide. A perfect opportunity to cultivate. So in many ways, equanimity is attitude of just seeing without reacting strongly. Just seeing things for what they are and not over-dramatize or exaggerate. I'm going to quote or read a little bit here from the Buddha's teachings on equanimity. But this is from a discourse called The Greater Discourse of Advice to Rahula. And Rahula was one of the Buddha's monks and also his son. And Rahula had asked a question he said, "Venerable Sir, how is mindfulness of breathing developed and cultivated that so that it is of great fruit and great benefit?" And the Buddha goes on, as the Buddha often did, repetitiously and kind of endlessly. And at one point he says, Rahula, develop meditation that is like the earth. For when you develop meditation that is like the earth, arisen agreeable and disagreeable contacts will not invade your mind and remain. Welcome. Just as people throw clean things and dirty things, excrement, urine, spittle, pus, and blood on the earth, and the earth is not repelled, humiliated, and disgusted because of that, so too, Rahula, develop meditation that is like the earth. For when you develop meditation that is like the earth, arisen, agreeable, and disagreeable contacts will not invade your mind and remain. He goes on and he talks about developing meditation like water. And when people piss and wash their clothes and wash their dishes in the water is not repelled. The water is not humiliated. That metaphor for equanimity or is. We see it other places, you know, sit like a mountain, sit like a tree, to be there peacefully and not overly upset or not overly reactive to what's going around you, to what is. The Buddha goes on, and he talks. I think it's right away. After he talks about meditating like water, and meditating like air, and meditating like fire, and meditating like space, he says, "Rahula, develop meditation on compassion. For when you develop meditation on compassion, any cruelty will be abandoned. Rahula, develop meditation on altruistic joy. For when you develop meditation on altruistic joy." Any discontent will be abandoned. Rahula, develop meditation on equanimity. For when you develop meditation on equanimity, any aversion will be abandoned. So those are... does anybody know what those are? Divine abode. So we have compassion, loving kindness, altruistic joy, and equanimity. So equanimity shows up here again in the Buddha's recommendation. This is something I didn't realize, but when we meditate, we have a meditation on loving kindness, and many of you have probably done this in one. At one time or another, where you develop loving feelings of loving kindness for someone close by, and then you, after you've sat with that for a while, you bring in people who are perhaps not so close by. Perhaps you bring in people who are you don't particularly like, and you just expand that sense of loving kindness in the meditation to the universe eventually. And then bring it back in to yourself. What I didn't realize is that all four of those have that same. There's the same meditation is recommended for all four of those qualities, including equanimity. I'm going to quote from Thich Nhat Hanh about equanimity. He says, without upeksha, your love may become possessive. A summer breeze can be very refreshing, but if we try to put it in a tin can so we can have it entirely for ourselves, the breeze will die. Our beloved is the same. He is like a cloud, a breeze, a flower. If you imprison him in a can, he will die. Yet many people do just that. So equanimity even in love. Equanimity, if you don't have a sense of letting someone simply be who they are, but you try to, or you respond to what they do. It's like, oh, they shouldn't do that. Oh, I don't like that. Oh, I wish they would do more of that. It's like putting a breeze in a can. So equanimity allows space around your relationships when you don't respond, or you cultivate an attitude of responding with open space. So another way equanimity is presented in the Buddhist tradition is something I've talked about here a couple of times before, and it's called the eight worldly winds. The eight worldly winds are they're translated in different ways. One translation is gain and loss, praise and ridicule, fame and disrepute, happiness and unhappiness. Those are the eight worldly winds. And when one is praised, one should accept that with equanimity. As when one is ridiculed. When one gains, one should accept that with equanimity as the same when one loses something. That you don't get blown over by either good fortune or bad fortune. That you just let them be. And there's a story, and I'm going to, again, I have read this before, but I love it, so I'm going to read it again. Well, maybe I'm not. This is a story about a poet who wrote the following poem to describe the state he had in meditation. I bow to the God among gods. His hair light illuminates the world. Unmoved when the eight winds blow, upright I sit in a purple gold lotus. Read that again. This is the Su Dung Po, the 11th century. I bow to the God among gods. His hair light illuminates the world. Unmoved when the eight winds blow, upright, I sit on a purple lotus. So he's reached a point where he is not moved by fame and ridicule, or praise and ridicule, gain or loss, or happiness or unhappiness. He's reached that state of equanimity. And he sent the poem to Master Fuo Yin, and the master's reply was, anybody remember? I knew you would, Rosemary. Bart. Bart. So as soon as Duong Po saw the great master Fu Yan's criticism, he couldn't get it out of his mind. And he rushed across the Yangtze. He lived on the south side of the river, and the great master lived on the north side, to find the master and scold him. He wanted to tell the master that he had written an enlightened poem, and so how could the master possibly have responded, Bart, Bart? This is a quote from the... In fact, when great master Fuo Yin criticized him, not only did Su Peng Po fart, he blazed forth and wanted to scorch Fuo Yin to death. And so he rushed across the river and burst unannounced into the master's quarters and shouted, how could you possibly scold someone and slander him that way by writing fart, fart? Fuo Yin replied, who was I slandering? You said that you were unmoved by the eight winds, but just by letting two small farts, I've blown you all the way across the Yangtze? And you say that the eight winds don't move you? You don't have to talk about eight winds. Just my two farts bounced you all the way up here. I mean, how often every day do we get blown off by the eight winds? I mean, part of the reason we meditate is to recognize, to watch when an emotion comes up or a thought comes up or a sound comes up. How quickly we get blown off center by that. And part of our meditation practice is simply to cultivate equanimity. To cultivate equanimity. In some ways, one way I like to think about it is those eight winds are all contained in my mind. They aren't coming from outside. They're all generated. They're all generated by me. Something happens, for sure. I get a piece of information, or I trip and fall down and skin my knee. Something happens. But then I generate the eight winds. Or as Robert Aitken wrote in one of his gathas, when a demon disrupts my zazen, I vow with all beings to remember who generates demons and return with a smile to my breath. We generate demons. We generate demons. And our practice is to simply recognize that and let the winds blow. Let the farts escape. Tim has been talking quite for the last few weeks on trust in mind or trusting mind, and in many ways that to me that's just the song to equanimity. That is a poem that is embracing equanimity. I'll read the first. Three stanzas, which puts me ahead of you, I think. You've been working on it for 3 weeks, and I think I'll get further in these next 5 minutes. Or, the great way is not difficult for those not attached to preferences. When neither love nor hate arises, all is clear and undisguised. Separate by the smallest amount, however, and you are as far from it as heaven is from earth. If you wish to know the truth, then hold to no opinions for or against anything. To set up what you like against what you dislike is the disease of the mind. When the fundamental nature of things is not recognized, the mind's essential peace is disturbed to no avail. The way is perfect as vast space is perfect, where nothing is lacking and nothing is in excess. So again, things arise constantly. That's the nature of reality. And when we choose, when we want things to be different than they are, when we prefer one happening over the other, that's when we lose our sense of equanimity. That's when we lose our centeredness. And an extreme of that is when we really over-dramatize, or when we fall into patterns and lose our equanimity that way. Something triggers a pattern that is not healthy. With equanimity, the pattern doesn't get triggered because whatever it is that triggers you, and whether it's somebody doing something that really always has rubbed you the wrong way, and whenever that happens, you fall into your behavior that just spirals, gets the whole thing spiraling. If you bring equanimity to that, you notice without getting caught in the pattern. You don't like the way that person bounces their foot. But you notice that. And you notice that you don't like it. But you let it go. Or you're sitting at a retreat. And you're sitting next to that person that breathes heavily or moves around every 5 minutes. If you bring equanimity to that, they're just moving. Or you're sitting here meditating on a Sunday morning and we've changed our patterns. And all of a sudden, towards the end of Zazen, people are coming in and making all sorts of noises and whispering and unzipping their jackets. Well, if you cultivate equanimity, that's just people coming in, shutting the door, zipping their jackets. However, if they're disturbing what you want, which is silence, you've lost it. And you've lost your meditation, or you've lost your equanimity. But bringing your attention back to simply what's happening, without preferring something else, is what we try to cultivate in our zazen. So, one other thing. I've looked at equanimity from kind of the Buddha's words, from some of the early Buddhist concepts, and from a couple of Zen perspectives. Another perspective, another way that we work with, we don't in our tradition work with equanimity, is to contemplate really gross and disturbing things. Some traditions do that. They will contemplate and meditate on decaying bodies or spittle or death as a way to cultivate equanimity. And so what this cultivating equanimity is really is investigating and studying your own mind, kind of in a scientifically detached way. You know, I mean, there's a similarity to creating the space so that you can just observe without getting hooked or blown over what's arising. And sometimes it's little stuff, and sometimes it's big stuff. Sometimes it'll absorb you and you'll obsess for hours and hours and hours. Even if you're in a meditation, even if you're in a day-long meditation, you can, I can attest, you can obsess for hours and hours and hours. But coming back to Aitken. When a demon disrupts my zazen, I vow with all beings to remember who generates demons. and return with a smile to my breath. Sometimes it's easier said than done, but that is what our practice is, to investigate in that way. And we don't often use the word investigate or study. Dogen used those words a lot. But that's what we do. And it's to cultivate that sense of equanimity and peace and joy. The sense of equanimity also is a way for us to be truly responsive in the world. And that might seem a little bit odd, the sense of peace and equanimity and joy. When I say it's a quality that allows us to be truly responsive in the world, what I mean by that is from equanimity, you can respond to what's happening directly as opposed to respond from the drama, to respond from the exaggeration, to respond from that pattern that clicked in. With equanimity, you can respond directly to what's arising. You can help in a way that isn't tied up with all of your baggage. You can help from a place that is clear and clean. And I personally believe that the sense of equanimity and tranquility does not in any way give us permission not to respond in the world. We have to respond in the world, whether it's in your relationships at work or in your relationships in your family or in the political world. We have an obligation to respond, but equanimity allows us to respond from a place that's not caught up in that drama. That the world actually probably will not end if your favorite candidate doesn't get elected governor on November 2nd. I have very strong political beliefs. And sometimes people, and actually I think it was your, I think Tim, you might have once said that your son asked, how can you, after one of these elections, how can you live? I mean, how can you, and, you know, and particularly if you work hard on a campaign and the next morning, you know, your candidate is lost. How can you live? Again, that's kind of a cauldron of the eight worldly winds, gain and loss. And what I'm saying is that you can act, you can have strong feelings, strong beliefs. You are, as a human being, called upon to act day in and day out. But by cultivating a space of equanimity, you can act without the exaggeration and without the drama, and you can be more truly responsive to your life and what's in your life. I'm going to stop there. I am. Anybody have any comments or questions? Yes.
Sometimes it seems like when people exercise extreme amounts of equanimity, they seem emotionally dead. And I think that, you know, as a social worker that works with, you know, mentally ill and homeless, it's cool if you can exercise equanimity when the ship's hitting the fan. You know, that's hopeful. But one time I paid a compliment to a priest about a talk that person did. I said, you know, your talk was that maybe you're not paying attention very much. And it was like, there was no thanks.
Was that me?
No smile. Thank you. But I kind of backed off and I thought, oh, okay, Zen master. You know, yeah, like they're exercising equanimity. They're not getting blown away by the compliment. And I thought to myself, well, I'm just not going to give you any feedback in the future. You can just wonder how you did it. So there's me getting blown away. Kind of emotionally, you know, somebody's emotionally dead when they just don't respond either way ever.
Yeah. I don't think, I hear that. I think there really is a difference between equanimity and emotional deadness, or equanimity and dissociation. Sometimes it's thought of as dissociation. So as I describe the practice that we have, and I describe it as kind of almost investigating the mind and observing the mind, and as something arises, noticing what then follows that. That could be thought of as dissociation in some ways, but that's really kind of dualistic to think of myself that's somewhere observing something. I think there are a couple of ways that equanimity can get gets a bad rap, and one is that emotionless response, and the other is, I think, dissociation. But I don't think it's the same. I mean, I think one can take a compliment like that and notice if, oh, I'm feeling good about that. And be curious about, oh, so I'm glad that you found it helpful, and maybe go somewhere with that. So I don't think equanimity needs to be is. I don't think it is at all this emotional coldness, nor is it dissociation. But I hear you. Other comments or questions, John, Matt?
I think it's interesting that you, multiple times you mentioned bring equanimity. And I think that...
I mentioned what?
Bring equanimity.
Bring equanimity.
Bring equanimity, kind of as if it's a thing in and of itself. And so would you say that doing this practice kind of naturally kind of cultivates that? And all of those things, you can't even really separate them. And so it's the bare awareness, it's that space that's created. Because then that makes sense, like it would be more of a natural thing over your practice over years. You know, to be able to have equanimity is something that just kind of happens, hopefully. So maybe what your experience was kind of a forced version that wasn't so natural.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that might be it too. And yeah, the words are hard. Bring equanimity, cultivate equanimity, because it's almost no way to talk about it. Are we just allowing natural equanimity by our practice to just flower and bloom, because it's there. It's kind of like just if we slow our minds down and stop the chattering, reach? I mean, what comes first? But there is the thing. Bringing might not be the right word, but I think I like the word cultivate, because we do have to do something. You know, we do have to. And whatever metaphor you want to use, plant the seeds, water the seeds. We have to do something to, as human beings, because we are human beings. We have our brains. We have our all that. So I like the word cultivate. Bring I don't particularly like. So I'll never use it again. Other questions or comments?
Please. Normally, equanimity, as you were reading from the Pollyanna, is traditionally associated or balanced by loving kindness, joy at other people's joy, and compassion, feeling other people's suffering. So, do you think we're balancing well between these four things, which you know in our practice here?
As a group, are we balancing well? Is that what your question is?
In our practice.
Yeah. I individual by individual, I'm willing to answer that question, but no, I'm just joking. Yes, joking. Yes. they're all different aspects of the same thing, I think. But it's an interesting question, because balancing those is an interesting question that goes back to Nancy's. Can you have So, how does compassion play out when one is equanimous? How does sympathetic joy play out when one is equanimous? How does loving kindness play out in equity, in a state of but my guess is you've seen the smile that's on his face right now before. I don't know. What do you think?
I do. I just think that the question, I heard the question in Nancy's question.
Yeah.
Are we cultivating an excess of equanimity and losing sight of each other, which are traditionally fair.
Yeah.
So I just wondered.
Yeah.
I feel great about it. I love you guys.
Other questions or comments?